Welcome to Two Chicks, Three Seats, the podcast that takes a look at the hospitality industry's hottest topics.
Two Chicks, Three Seats is hosted by Kate Kennedy and Rachel Calkins and is brought to you by Triple Seat, the industry leader in event management software.
Find out more about Triple Seat at tripleseat.com. Happy Friday, everyone, and welcome back to Two Chicks, Three Seats. We've been on hiatus for a little bit, actually, since March, because we've been focusing on some other things, but we've missed all of our listeners and chatting together, talking about industry trends. So we are back to talking about the hospitality industry with our episode today. Yay.
Welcome back to us. What episode number is this? What
episode is 68, actually. Wow.
I feel like it should be way more than that, to be honest.
I know. But now we're getting back into the swing of things and we're going to come back to you guys all. So stay tuned for that. Mm-hmm. But now, obviously, we are in the summer months, which is a great time for the hospitality industry. The cocktails are extra refreshing and cool. Outdoor dining is up and running everywhere. And summer parties are happening left and right. So life is pretty good right now, right?
Yeah, I think so.
Life is good.
Life is good.
So today for this episode, we want to talk to you about what we've been seeing in the industry lately when it comes to some recent trends, specifically for cocktails, cooking trends, and some other things that are trending in the event world. And hopefully this information can be useful to you all as you're looking ahead to the rest of the summer months in July, August, and beyond. So let's kick it off with our favorite topic, cocktails.
I feel like when we do trend episodes, we always start with cocktails.
How could you not?
I know. I agree. I drank like 100 too many cocktails this past weekend. So I can talk about them, but I am not drinking any for a little while. I need a little break.
My body needs a break. Same here. Actually, I'm less cocktailed out. I'm more high nooned out. So,
oh God, I drank so many. And those new Topo Chico,
I haven't had those yet, but
they're pretty good. So we switched between high noons and those. And I didn't really drink the only cocktails that I drank, and it's not a cocktail, it's just bourbon in a glass. I just drank bourbon. Like every night I'd have a bourbon on the rocks to decompress.
Just casual
bourbon on the rocks. So I drank a little too much, or not too much, just a lot.
There's never too much for 4th of July weekend. So
that's true. It was an extended long weekend for me as well. I was off Monday and Tuesday. So lots of drinking. Anyways, let's move on to cocktails. So not sure if you guys knew this already, but apparently it's the summer of Mezcal, and I am here for it 100%. And for those of you that aren't familiar with what Mezcal is, it's tequila's like sassy, smoky sister. I like the smoky part. It's literally smoky, by the way.
It is.
It's tequila. It's like a tequila with a smoky flavor. But it's made from agave, just like a tequila is. It's just, it's prepared differently. So tequila is usually, the agave is slow, roasted in the oven. Baked. I shouldn't say roasted, that's the wrong word. So it's like slow baked in the oven. Whereas the agave in Mezcal is slow roasted in a pit on the ground, which sounds weird, but it's just like an old culture way of doing it.
Yeah.
And it gives it that like smooth, smoky flavor. So that's sort of the difference in how it's prepared. There's a lot more that goes along with how it's prepared, but that's the only part I know. So
they don't just toss it in the air fryer.
No, they don't toss it in the air fryer. I wonder what that would taste like.
As you were saying that, I was like, okay, so what's the air fried version of tequila, mezcalita?
That's funny. It's the air fryer versus like smoking it in a, is there like a, let's see, what are those things called? The, like the rice cookers? Instant pots. Wow. All right. So some examples, if you're new to Mezcal, or if you're a seasoned, enjoyer of Mezcal, just a few brands that I really like, and I am going to butcher the pronunciation of all of these. So please, I'm so sorry. Please don't get mad at me. I never took a lick of Spanish my entire life, in addition to the fact that I don't do accents well at all. So I'm sorry. But anyways, Mezcal El Silencio.
That was good.
This is about $40 to $45 a bottle, which is like on the low end for mezcal. Mezcal, you don't want to buy cheap mezcal. It's not, it does not taste good. So you want it to be like, it's smoky already. So you want it to have that smooth factor. And this uses, again, going to butcher, this uses espadin, which is like the main agave that tequilas use as well. And this is like the main one that is used in mezcal. There are others though. So the second one that I'm going to talk about, Bozal Ensemble, I don't know, B-O-Z-A-L, that uses three different types of agave. And that's around $50 to $55 a bottle normally. And I think that one's a little smoother because of the, I think because of the three types of agave in it. But of course, I have to mention that Casamigo makes a mezcal and it's Casamigo Joven. And that's about I'd say like $75 to $80 a bottle. Normally I see it at $80. I think that's like the normal price. I have a bottle of that at home. It's my go-to. I know, like, I love Casamigos. And so that's why, but those are some three. You can go really high end with mezcal. And then there are really cheap versions, but I just would warn you to stay away from like a $20 bottle. But if listeners out there know a $20 bottle of mezcal that's actually good, let me know, please, because I feel like it's expensive. So, yeah. So let's talk about a few cocktails that I like to make with mezcal. The first is a little more complicated than the second. I like to do that. You know, I'll give you something that you have to muddle and the actual lot of ingredients. And the second one's super simple. So the first one is raspberry citrus mezcal cooler. And this one, I like raspberries, but if you don't like raspberries or can't get your hands on them, you can use strawberries or blackberries as well. Have to be fresh. So I would use about 6 to 8 fresh raspberries. This is per drink. And then you want a fresh lime and fresh grapefruit. If you don't like grapefruit, because I love grapefruit. I love grapefruit in the summer. I love grapefruit all the time. If you are not a fan of grapefruit, orange works really well with this drink as well, because both the drinks I'm going to talk about today use grapefruit. So obviously, and I do think that grapefruit and mezcal work really well together, which is why I chose grapefruit. So again, if you don't like grapefruit, use orange, but it has to be fresh. So half a lime juiced and half a grapefruit or orange juiced. Then you're going to use simple syrup. You're going to need about like 1.5 to 2 ounces per drink. And again, I've said this a million times in the podcast, but simple syrup is literally just a 1-to-1 ratio of sugar and water over medium heat until it's dissolved. That's all it is. You can buy it in the store, but it takes 3 seconds to make it. So I wouldn't waste your money. And then fresh mint leaves, about 2 to 3 per drink. Obviously mezcal, you're going to need 1 to 2 ounces, depending on how strong you like your drinks. I'm sure you guys know out there that I go 2 ounces because I like the mezcal taste and I like my drink strong. And then I'm going to say this wrong. Tajin?
Is it tajin? Tajin.
Tajin. Is that it? Tajin. Do you think that's it?
Tajin. I think that is.
Okay. So this is like, this is a pretty classic Mexican restaurant like vibe, right? Where they rim the glass with it. And you can find it. So I find it at Aldi. I don't know if everyone who's listening has an Aldi near them. It's like $1 for like the like very authentic made in Mexico spice blend. Yeah. But you can also find it at like Market. That's also New England. I'm not going to say Market Basket. Super New England to me. I've seen it at Whole Foods and it was like $6. And I was like, that's crazy. But literally I buy it at Aldi for $1 and it's great. I use it like on fish and stuff too. So it has many purposes, but for this drink, we're going to rim the glass with it. So basically you just take your raspberries and your mint, you muddle them until the juices are like, you know, really absorbed into the mint. You're going to fill the shaker 3/4 of the way with ice, add your mezcal, simple syrup, citrus juices, and just shake that. But you want to shake it really well, like for 30 seconds at least. And then you're going to use one of the leftover citrus peels to rim the glass and dip it in the tajin. I hope we're right about that. And then you're going to fill a cocktail glass with fresh ice and pour the drink over it. And then you can garnish with like a mint leaf and whatever, you know, orange or grapefruit or whatever you want. So that's the raspberry citrus mezcal cooler. And then the second one, this one will be quick. It's just the mezcal Paloma. And I'm like year in and year out, Palomas are my go-to summer drink. And they're literally this exact drink, but with tequila instead of mezcal. So I've recently just replaced the tequila with mezcal and it's delicious. And all it is 2 ounces of mezcal, 2 ounces of fresh, make sure it's fresh. I like pink grapefruit juice. So that's like those ruby red grapefruits. You can use regular grapefruit juice too, but I think the pink tastes better with it. 1 ounce of simple syrup and then, 1 ounce of grapefruit soda or plain soda. Fever Tree makes a really good grapefruit soda, but there are calories in it. So if you're looking for something like really light, and not super sugary, I would go with either plain soda water or maybe like the grapefruit Spindrift. I use that sometimes too. It's really good. So you're going to just toss all the ingredients besides the soda water in a shaker with ice and shake it for like 15 to 20 seconds and pour that over fresh ice, top with the soda water. And then you can rim the glass with salt if you want. I normally don't, but a classic Paloma does have a salt rim. And then garnish with like a lime wedge. And you're all set, ready to go. Ready to take on whatever the night or day, whatever it brings you.
I had the best Paloma when I was in Orlando last week. Ooh. And I normally wouldn't order a Paloma from a menu. I love tequila and I love margaritas. I love all that. But I was like, this was surprisingly delicious because I feel like it's not my go-to.
I feel like it's, it all depends on you need, like you can't use like fake. And I say this, like people who listen to our podcast know that like, I am like miss do not use like canned or, you know, juices that are already made, like don't do it. Just always make fresh juice when you're making cocktails. But this one, especially, like you need the fresh grapefruit juice. I think it makes a big difference. So, and if you don't like pulp, you can always use like a thin strainer and strain the pulp out so that you don't have any pulp in there. But I feel like the pulp adds a little element that's delicious. I love Palomas. They're so easy to make too. And they're just, and they're always, I feel like I make them for like parties because you can batch Palomas too. They're really easy to batch. And I feel like people are always impressed by them. And I'm like, it's just a Paloma.
Because they're all pretty. I mean, once you have a drink that has color in it, it's just pretty.
True. I know. It's like the perfect. That's why the pink grapefruit juice, too, I feel like it makes a difference, like taste-wise, but also looks-wise. It's just so pretty in the glass. So
I love that.
Yeah.
Well, everyone get your shopping carts ready because you got some cocktails to make.
Yes, you do.
All right. Well, next up for some summer trends, we're going to talk about some cooking trends because summer is a perfect time to, you know, dive into that recipe that maybe you pinned to your Pinterest board to try and you haven't had the time to yet. And so now maybe you have a summer barbecue that you're hosting or at your restaurant, if you want to try something different, maybe, I don't know, a special off the cuff, if you have these ingredients on hand, could be fun. So this first one is actually a half-baked harvest recipe. I don't know, Kate, do you follow Half-Baked Harvest?
No, but maybe so
she,
I will now.
I believe her name is Tegan, but she has like cookbooks and everything. And she's really Instagram, has a good Instagram following and she's awesome, but she has some really interesting recipes. And so this one is the tomato, peach, and burrata salad.
That sounds amazing.
I'm positive that I mentioned some variation of like peach and burrata together last summer, but like, I remember it had a twist because it had prosciutto. So I literally love that combination, but I've never made it for myself. So now
you didn't make it. I remember last summer you talked about making it. I'm going to make this tonight. Like I'm making it.
I lied. I didn't make it. So now this one, it's like a vegetarian version. It doesn't have meat in it. So I think this, and it's literally so easy. It doesn't require any major cooking skills. You can throw it together pretty quickly. And I think it's easy to make in large batches. So easy for big groups serving at a restaurant with friends as an appetizer. So I think it's a perfect summer staple. So
delicious. Yeah.
I'll read off some of the ingredients, and I'll link the recipe in the episode description, but some of the things you'll need that maybe you have these already on hand or just to put on your shopping cart, you're going to need half a cup of extra virgin olive oil, a quarter cup of balsamic or champagne vinegar. And also I'm going to explain this in three parts. So you're making like a homemade vinaigrette and then you're putting the salad together. So a lot of these ingredients are for the vinaigrette, but then we'll come in again later. You'll need a tablespoon of honey, half a shallot finely chopped, one clove of garlic, a teaspoon of lemon zest, a quarter cup of fresh basil, two tablespoons of chopped fresh oregano, a tablespoon of chopped fresh dill, a tablespoon of chopped fresh thyme, red pepper flakes, salt and black pepper. And so you're going to combine all that together to make your vinaigrette, which I'll explain more in a second. But then for the salad itself, you're going to need 1.5 to 2 cups of cherry tomatoes, halving them if they're too large, 2 to 3 peaches sliced into wedges, and then 1 cup of fresh pitted cherries, 8 ounces of your burrata cheese at room temperature, and then 1/4 cup of toasted pumpkin seeds. Ooh. So the first like little slew of ingredients, which you can look at specifically at the recipe, but that's how you're going to make the vinaigrette. So you're going to combine all of those ingredients into a glass jar and mix them up. And then you'll taste it, see how you're liking it. You can add some red pepper flakes in for a little spice and then salt and pepper as you need to. And then in a large bowl, you're going to toss the tomatoes, the peaches, and the cherries with 1/3 of the portion of the dressing that you created. mix that all up, and then you're going to let it sit 15 minutes at room temperature or up to 4 hours in the fridge as it gets all that flavor in there. And then when you're, you know, plating it, you can plate it all together on a nice tray or in a bigger bowl, and then you can break the balls of burrata around the salad, drizzling the remaining dressing on top, and then topping it with those pumpkin seeds and the additional fresh herbs. And then usually people will serve it with like grilled or toasted bread. So it's
really good.
So delicious, refreshing, vegetarian, easy to share. Probably could become vegan if you don't use the certain burrata cheese, the vegan version of burrata cheese.
Vegan ricotta, maybe. Yeah. Like, I know that that's going to change the taste of it, but you never know. It could be yeah. good. I've never seen vegan burrata, so I don't know if that's.
Are you still a vegan?
No, God, no.
That was a last summer thing.
Hear me out real quick. Okay. Instead of pumpkin seeds, and I love pumpkin seeds, but I feel like summer wise, like what if you did pistachios instead of pumpkin seeds?
Oh,
right. Like smash
pistachio with like peach burrata. I love those flavors too.
Yeah. I feel like that'd be really good. Just saying.
So editor's note, I actually do think in the recipe, she said you could switch up the seeds. So pumpkin isn't like 100%. You don't have to go that route, but I love pistachios. And I think it's a good with the fruits. They all kind of pair well together too.
I agree.
So grab your peaches, grab your burrata, your tomatoes, and that laundry list of other ingredients.
that list of 700 other ingredients.
But a lot of them you'll have already on hand.
No, I know. Like two of the ingredients are like salt and pepper. So.
Yeah, right. But it honestly, okay, so I'm going to take a photo when I make it. And so I'll send it to you as proof that I actually followed through this time.
Mm-hmm.
So that's your appetizer. And then moving on to desserts. So,
right to dessert. We're not doing we're just not appetizer and dessert.
Cocktails, appetizer and dessert.
This is my dream meal.
This is actually that just made me laugh. So, I think we've like made it clear that the fruity flavors are summer. So we're summer ready with our Paloma, with our cooler drink, with our raspberries. And so now this one is a blackberry lavender naked cake with white chocolate buttercream.
Wow.
Which sounds amazing. And I feel like maybe you'll be able to understand what I'm saying with this, but I feel like the fruity cake is kind of like an Instagrammable moment right now. I'm like, I think of how it's used in some like influencer-y marketing when they're like making a picnic and then they have the cake that has like flowers as garnishes and it's like this whole pretty moment. And so when I saw this recipe and just looking at the photos, that's kind of the same vibe that I was getting with, you know, you have your little white daisies next to it and you have it as a picnic or like on outdoor dining, you know, it's kind of the whole set for summer and, you know, phone eats first. So it's great for that Instagram photo moment.
I agree. And I think although this one, I'm a little confused by this cake. So it says it's a naked cake, but then it also has white chocolate buttercream. So are naked cakes normally like naked, like without frosting? Is that why?
So that's a good question. I think, I mean, it was naked as it became, and then it got dressed.
I mean, I'm okay with it either way. It sounds delicious without or with. So
is that what a naked cake is normally? There's no frosting or there's no like.
I thought naked cake, maybe, I don't know. I guess that's where my mind went is I thought that naked cakes were like, there was no like frosting on them. Like there could be, you know what? Is there frosting in the middle?
Cause there's frosting in the middle.
Okay. I didn't look at the photo. So that's my bad.
But there is also frosting on the top.
Okay.
It's a little deceiving. We got creative with this name. But I'm not going to read the whole recipe, but I'll link the ingredients, but a lot of them are what you will have in your expecting to be in a cake and maybe we'll have in your kitchen already, but you're going to have like a separate recipe for the cake itself. Then there's a blackberry lavender jam that goes inside with some blackberries, honey, lemon juice, dried lavender to get that flavor, which I think is beautiful. And then your white chocolate buttercream is going to have powdered sugar, white chocolate that's been melted and cooled, and then putting it all together in a standard way that you would make a cake. And then it's like the different layers of the cake.
That's amazing.
So I guess there's a little more dedication to this cake than to the appetizer that preceded it. So,
I mean, baking is always way more complicated. Right. I think I don't bake anything well, and I feel like the summer it's tough because it's like cute. Although we just got central AC in our house, so maybe that will help with my summer baking, because I feel like that really puts a it literally, I was going to say puts a damper on things, and it literally puts a damper on things because of the humidity in the house.
It's right, like, right.
Nothing rises and you're like, what is happening?
Right.
But yeah, maybe our new fancy air conditioners will help with my summer baking. Yeah, I am such a bad baker. It's horrible. I cook well, but bake, no.
I think, so if you're like deciding between if you'd rather have a cooking skill or a baking skill, I'd rather have a cooking skill. I think my mom is an amazing baker, but not an amazing cook. And so yeah,
my mother-in-law is the same. Sorry, Shirley, if you're listening, but she's not a great cook, but her baking is like out of this world. So, yeah. And I think my mom was the opposite. My mom like burnt brownies, but like will make like an amazing meal. So I don't know, but I think you're right. Cause I feel like it's much easier to purchase baked goods than it is to, like purchase a meal. So
that's true.
I think I'd rather be able to cook.
Baking is much more precise. So like measuring out everything more precisely than cooking. Mm-hmm. So some people don't have, I mean, maybe it's like the type A versus type B personality. If you're more into one or the other.
Yeah. I don't measure. Like, I don't follow recipes well, like cocktail recipes. Like that's why all my cocktail recipes are like 2 to 3 ounces, 1 to 2 ounces. Cause I'm like, I don't know. Do you like it sweet or do you like it strong? Like,
right.
You know?
So personal preference.
Yeah. Yeah. That's why I'm not good at baking. Cause I'd be like, I want a little more sugar, and then it would be like disgusting.
A little bit sweeter. Okay. I don't want that anymore.
More sugar.
Well, hopefully your pastry chef, if they want to try the blackberry lavender naked cake with white chocolate buttercream, they're actually good at baking. So well, it'll be in good hands.
Yeah, I think so.
So
those are good. I want to make a burrata salad tonight now.
Maybe we have like a burrata salad contest and we see who makes the better one.
Makes the better
peach
one.
Tomato.
Yum. I want to do something with peaches now. I have peaches in my fridge that are about to go bad. So maybe I should cook with them instead of pretending I'm going to eat them.
Yeah, exactly. Good idea.
All right. Well, let's move on to some summer event trends. This one is actually coming from Triple Seat. So we, to start, it's summer. Clearly, the 4th of July has passed. As my grandmother would say, the summer's over. every year after the 4th, my grandmother would literally be like, well, summer's over. And I'm like, it just started.
Yeah.
But anyway, summer events are here. They're in full swing. And we definitely have seen it coming through Triple Seat specifically. So in the past 30 days alone, we've seen 515,000 leads come through Triple Seat to our customers. So that's huge. So round of applause for our customers and their summer leads.
Yay.
And if you're not a Triple Seat customer, there is one big reason to become one. So earlier this month, we surveyed 500 consumers. So the general public, not our customers, but consumers, about their plans for the second half of 2022, including the summer, obviously. And we got some great insights that we're going to share with you. So some of the key takeaways: summer is clearly the most popular season for events, with 50% of consumers choosing that as the time of year they're planning to host their event. So obviously weddings, but other social events too are huge. And I think too, like a lot of weddings, they happen in the summer, but a lot happen in the fall too. So with that comes like wedding showers, bachelorette parties, like all these things that are pre-wedding events, you know, and then baby showers, all of those things, birthday parties. I know that if your birthday is in December, you can't celebrate it in the summer, but I think if your birthday is in the summer, people are more apt to host a party rather than just like going somewhere or whatever, doing something else. So we asked them how far in advance that they book their events, and 1 to 3 months is the answer that they gave. So you may have been seeing like increase in summer bookings, you know, in May or even in like March or April, but you should expect that continue through the summer. And that means that like holiday events, they'll start booking those in September, even in August. So, and I think a lot of our customers do realize that already, that, you know, that the holiday events get booked in basically the summer and summer events get booked in the winter. So, but it's great. So that just means like, you know, you have to keep marketing your venue and being on top of these upcoming event seasons before they happen. We're actually releasing a holiday infographic, and we'll have a campaign around that next week to our customers and prospects. So we do the same thing. We follow sort of the same schedule as people who book events in venues do with our prospecting. So, you know, just being on top of all of that. you can also check out, just for some ideas, we recently hosted a Triple C University remote webinar on marketing tips for driving business that you can find on our Triple C University YouTube channel. And then we'll link that as well if you need some ideas there. But we also asked in the survey what sort of amenities that consumers look for in a venue. And if you can't find these top amenities at your venue already, then you should get like look into offering them. And if you do offer them, then you should highlight them in your marketing campaign. So enough restrooms for guests was a big one. And that's kind of funny to me, but it actually, it's funny to me because I used to manage events at a venue that had like negative bathrooms and it was always an issue. So yeah. I totally feel it. Bar packages are a big one that consumers are looking for. Dance floor. And that's easy. If you don't have a specific dance floor, you can create one in an event room. So, you know, in a private dining room or whatever it is. AV equipment. I agree. When I used to book events for Triple C, this was huge because we'd have to hire an outside company to do the AV if they didn't already have it. And I think a lot of venues since the pandemic have kind of upped their AV game because they realize that a lot of events have like a virtual aspect or another aspect that requires AV. And I think a lot of venues are upping their AV game. So something to think about. Outdoor space, obviously you can't just create it if you don't have it. Well, you can. We've seen a lot of customers obviously like convert, like, you know, their parking lots and mm-hmm. sidewalks. So you can, there's some things you can do there, some DIY things. Live music or a DJ was another big one. Great views from the space, which you cannot create. That's not something that you, Ms. Mountain. And there's the ocean. So yeah. Let's see what else. There was lounge space. So that's something interesting that I never really thought about, but I guess that makes sense. You don't just want like a sterile room. You want
right.
More like interesting spaces. A game room. That's interesting. Huh. I'm like thinking about these as I'm reading them. I mean, I don't know. I feel like that. So you have something to do, I guess, at the party. I feel like game rooms, for me, if I'm going to do like a family event, game room is key because it's the kids have to do. But that's an interesting one I never really thought about. And patio, which goes along with the outdoor space, but patio is a big one. People like to book their events in the summer, especially on a patio. So if people aren't hosting an event at a venue, they are hosting events at home and they're still ordering catering from restaurants. I'm actually hosting Maisie's third birthday party on Saturday of this upcoming week, tomorrow, actually. And we are doing catering. So I get it. Even for a three-year-old's birthday party, I was like, I'm not cooking, we're doing catering. And I think in the summer, a lot of people go to catering if they're hosting events at their house, because, you know, I feel like even when we don't cook inside, it's too hot to cook inside. And if my husband's grilling outside, then we lose him for the entire party.
Right.
So, which some men enjoy, but you know, I like to have him around during the party. So I think that, you know, catering's huge in the summer. So, you know, people will be hosting summer parties and they may not want to worry about cooking for big groups of guests. And I think that's a huge marketing opportunity for restaurants. And even if you know, catering's new to you, summer's a big catering. Cause I feel like you get a lot of catering advertisements for like barbecue places and things like that in the summer. But I think everyone, I'm not getting catering from barbecue restaurants. So
yeah,
other restaurants can definitely bank on that. And just a few other stats that you can look at when it comes to events in 2022 as a whole. So 40% of consumers are planning 3 to 5 events this year. That's a lot of events, I feel like. And I mean, that's actually like a really lot.
Isn't that?
That's a lot of events.
That's what the survey says.
That's what the survey says. 40%.
We have some big spenders filling out our
survey. Seriously, that's great though. I mean, there was a time in my life where I guess I was booking 3 to 5 events a year when I was like in weddings and stuff. So maybe it's like the right, you know, age group. So another one is consumers are spending an average of almost $7,000 per event. The exact number was $6,947 per event. It's a lot of money that's out there for the taking. So that's a big one. And then 66 of events have 50 guests or less, which, you know, I think that's actually a really good number because a lot of places can't host more than like 50 in their private dining room or whatever it may be. So that's a, you know, it's a good indicator of who you should be marketing to and the types of events that you should be marketing. So yeah, I thought that was really some really interesting stuff that we got back from that from that. And the infographic is really cool and put together really nicely. So definitely check that out. We'll link it, as I said before. But
I love that.
Summer is exciting. Yeah.
Go summer events.
Go summer. Sorry. I need more coffee or less. I don't know.
I think you're just right. You're perfect.
I'm in the perfect middle ground here, I guess.
So our last summer event trend is sustainability in events. And I know sustainability is important all year round, but something about the summertime just makes sustainability feel even more important. Like, I don't know if it's because like we're in the ocean or we're just outside more, but it just really hones in on we need to keep our earth clean today and every day. So just highlighting sustainability in events. And since there are so many events happening in the summer, we have a couple ways that you can be keeping events sustainable in, you know, different avenues. So for some examples, so first up, sustainable swag. So I was actually at High Tech hospitality event in Orlando last week, which is a big trade show. Mm-hmm. And it was interesting to kind of see the different swag items that people are handing out, because obviously big trade shows, swag, everything can get to be really wasteful if you're producing too much or you're not being conscious about what kind of products you're bringing to the table. So this may be more on the corporate event side, but just being extra conscious about the swag items that you're handing out, both how they're made and the quantity that you're ordering, so you're not being wasteful of the material. So at the event that I attended in Orlando, one of my favorite items was from the PMS company, Stay In Touch, one of our partners actually, but it was a coffee mug that I'm showing right here. And by looking at it, it kind of looks like it would be like made from like eco-friendly materials. It kind of has that, like, how do you describe it? Like this like grainy kind of like disposable material look, but it's actually like reusable. Making that sound into the microphone. So, and it has their like logo around it. So people would like use this instead of using a paper cup that they would just like throw away for one-time use. They were using it throughout like the week. And then it obviously has the logo on it too.
I love it's those.
Like kind of good branding. Yeah. And they're like, I took one home. I don't drink coffee and they didn't have tea. So I would like took one home just to like have and like remember. But I thought this was a great idea and also great marketing on that side, because then people were walking around with this mug the whole day because you could reuse it and like refill at the different stations. So I don't know. Good job by Stay In Touch. This was a great one, but just like thinking about things that are on more of the eco-friendly side and where you can like do your part in that aspect when it comes to swag. So that's like the first point where it plays in with events. But then, so the second point that I found, so I found this interesting article by Global Citizen that talks about going green at festivals. And the article is titled 8 Eco-Friendly Festivals to Go to Around the World This Summer, and summer festival season, outdoor concerts. And so I think a lot of these practices that they were talking about going green at these festivals could work also with planners on like large scale events. So I thought this was kind of an interesting parallel to shout out. So the Glastonbury Festival in the UK just recently happened, and they really pride themselves with their Go Green initiatives. So a couple of things that they do during ticket sales, attendees are required to sign a green pledge where they vow to leave no trace. And, you know, you're going to have people that aren't abiding, but it does see good results. And they do see good results because of how eco-friendly practices are represented really heavily. And they really are honing in and explaining this during the whole registration process. And then at the end of the event, a portion of their event sales also end up being donated back to organizations that work towards a greener future. So if like big companies that are, and maybe this already does happen, but if big companies who are hosting large corporate events are also having that sort of give back initiative, that's something that we could consider.
Yeah.
And festivals definitely get like they're a bit wasteful because of all the emissions that they're using for like the lights and the music and like all the smoke and everything. So
And the trash.
And there's the trash.
So much trash at festivals.
Yeah, the trash. Oh my gosh, yeah. So that's like that they're trying to have those give back portions of it as well. Burning Man in the desert in Nevada is another popular festival.
Right? Of course, they're eco-friendly.
Yeah, eco-friendly practices.
Oh, that's funny.
I think they call them like their 10 commandments, and one of them is to leave no trace. And so I found this part just especially interesting, but they have no trash cans at Burning Man. So no trash cans, no recycling bins. So all of the disposing of your trash and recyclables is on the attendee to do.
I read that somewhere before, and I thought it was interesting because most people who go to Burning Man, like a lot of them don't live there. So like, you know, it's, I guess it really does make you think about what you're bringing there. And it's just funny though, cause like, especially Burning Man, which is like such a high, you know, it's usually people who have a lot of money who go to these things and they're flying in private jets. And then they're like, but I didn't use any trash.
Yeah, I know.
But I mean, I think it's good anyway. I mean, at least they're doing something that's like not horribly hurting the environment, you know what I mean? While they're there. So, I mean, it's good. And like you said, I think if other smaller places do something like this, it has an even bigger impact if it like takes off, and then like venues that host like smaller events or, you know, concerts and stuff like that.
Yeah,
have a huge impact.
For sure. And then like, it's just kind of the expectation. And I think, and from just, I haven't been to like a big festival before, but from just reading and just like seeing it, I feel like it's definitely part of the culture in a way to have some sort of environmental responsibility. Mm-hmm. And so some of the practices, at least in the ones that were mentioned in this article, are kind of a norm. And like, people want to respect the space. If it's in the desert, you know, you're not going to leave your trash in the desert.
Do you think people throw their trash into the fire? Like, no one's looking. We just throw this trash bag. No one will know.
That's funny. But I don't know. Those could also be just translated into smaller events, like you said, too, smaller concerts. And then Global Citizen, their festival, they have one in Ghana and in New York. And so instead of traditional diesel, they use an alternative that results in 90% less greenhouse gas emissions to keep the lights on throughout the duration of the concerts. They partner with different groups to offset estimated emissions. And then they have a single-use plastic ban. So you cannot use single-use plastic, which that's an easy thing to incorporate into regular hospitality industry events.
Absolutely.
And then they have composting and recycling bins everywhere throughout the ground. So I feel like, I don't know, thinking of large scale events and all the aspects of production that go into it, these could also be translated into the events that some of our customers may be doing on the large scale, which is interesting to think about. So festival season, bringing in the go green energy.
Go green energy. I think, you know, like we talked about the swag before too. Like, I feel like, especially when it comes to places that, you know, restaurants that also have like they serve coffee or like, you know, something like that. Like I saw, so there's a local place that I get coffee at almost like every day, and they use paper straws, which everyone hates, right? They're awful. It's like the worst idea ever. And I understand that they're way better for the environment, but like, I will not use, I'd rather just like sip the coffee out of the ice, like the glass or whatever. But they sell for like 50 cents. You can buy a branded plastic straw. So they're not expensive. They have their name clearly on the straw. And like, I must have 20 of these at home because I like often forget it and then buy another one. So they're making money. And also like, I use them we have a pool, and we have like a little pool house, and I have them like in a cup in the pool house. And so people are like, oh, is this like where you get your coffee? So it's, you know, I don't know. Yeah. It works in other ways. Like, you can sell this swag too and show that you're being, you know, you're helping the environment. But just one idea. And I think the money actually goes to like an environment, like a local environmental agency. I forget which one, but anyways. Yeah. So
I wonder, have you ever seen a restaurant that does like plastic straws or like reusable like straws?
Them? Yeah. I don't know,
sells them or like offers them when they bring drinks.
I don't know, but I feel like, I feel like if I went somewhere and they're like, oh, we don't have straws, but we do offer like these branded ones, you can keep them and they're reusable for like 50 cents or even a dollar. I would probably buy them. It might piss some people off. You can't please everyone though. But like, I personally would be like, oh, I'll buy one of those. Sure. Cause I hate drinking, like, especially soda. Like if I order, like, I don't often order like a Diet Coke, but if I do, I need a straw. Like, I cannot sip a Diet Coke out of a cup with ice. I just can't, I don't know why I can't do it. I'm a baby. I need my straw.
But it's kind of like how like grocery stores banned reusable or like plastic bags. You have to like pay 50 cents. Yeah. So why can't, I mean, maybe would like up the cost of a cocktail by a dollar, but If it's for the betterment of the environment, you're not wasting straws. It's kind of the same concept there.
Exactly. And you know, you do the swag for Triple C. You know, like they're not expensive. Like if you buy just like the regular, like one colored plastic reusable straws, like they're not expensive. You can get them for way less than 50 cents or a dollar a piece and then sell them, you know? So, I don't know. Yeah. Could be a good idea, but I have like 20 from that coffee shop. I'm always
super fan.
I'll buy another one. I'm like, why don't I just keep them in my car in the glove compartment? You know what? I'm going to do that. Cause then I will just like put them in, but I just keep
supporting small business. 50 yeah. Cents
well, that's
time.
Why I'm supporting small business and they look cute in a cup in my pool house. So
I love it. I think that's all for episode 68. We're 68. Back at it. Yeah.
Oh my goodness. Wow. And we have a special guest for our next episode next week, right?
We do. You're going to have to tune in to see who that special guest is, He's a pretty big shot. If you ask us,
he's a big time executive.
Yeah,
he actually is, but I don't think I've ever referred to him as that, but he is. But yeah, tune in next week to find out who that is. And thanks for tuning in today. And thanks for being loyal, even though we've been gone for so long.
We're back at it. We're back at it.
Yep. And we may not do an episode every week because it is the summer. And we got two coming up in a row this week, next week. But then I'm on vacation and then Rach is on vacation at another point, you know, so it's summer's hard because there are a lot of vacations happening, but yeah,
follow us on Instagram for updates and just obviously subscribe to the podcast wherever you listen to podcasts, and then they'll automatically be sent to your phone when they're released. So I feel like that's the easiest way that I follow along with the podcast that I love, since you guys all love us.
And we'll have some great ones coming up in the fall around, event camp speakers. So more information on that as well. We like to do those around event camp time. So we are doing event camp again very soon.
Yeah. All right. Well, thanks for listening.
Thanks, guys. See you next week.
Thanks for listening to this week's episode of Two Chicks, Three Seats, your events industry podcast, brought to you by Triple Seat, the industry leader for event management software.
Find out more about Triple Seat at tripleseat.com.